Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
There is no doubt that our children are under attack by those who want to distort their worldview and tell them good is evil and evil is good. Planned Parenthood and organizations pushing the acceptance of the homosexual lifestyle are at the top of the list and probably are the most active within our schools. These assaults have been evident for a number of years, but the assaults on our nation's children are increasing. On January 18th, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network released results of its survey of attitudes about homophobia, quote-unquote homophobia, and gender nonconformity in elementary schools, and it released an even more disturbing toolkit for eradicating conservative moral beliefs in young children through the government schools. Now let's just think, even a decade ago, who would have even thought discussing homophobia and gender nonconformity had anything to do with reading, writing, and arithmetic? Now my guest today is Laurie Higgins. She's the director of the Division of School Advocacy for the AFA affiliate in Illinois, the Illinois Family Institute. Thanks, Laurie, for being with us.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
And for keeping an eye on GLSEN.
Oh, my gosh. I wish I didn't have to.
I know what you mean. Now, you know, just looking at those two words, or actually three words, the word homophobia and then the phrase gender nonconformity in an elementary school.
Yes.
How wrong can this be?
It's hugely problematic. And actually, if you read, there's two documents. One is their survey. It's actually titled Playgrounds and Prejudice. It's about elementary school climate in the United States. And the other is their toolkit for elementary schools, which is called Ready, Set, Respect. They actually use the terms homophobia and heteronormativity and gender normativity, both of which they want to eradicate.
Now, what adult even knows what those means, let alone an elementary kid?
Exactly. Well, what they've described in giving instructions to teachers about how not to promote either heteronormativity or gender normativity is they explain that a heteronormative viewpoint is one that expresses heterosexuality as a given instead of being one of many possibilities. They want the idea of heterosexuality to be presented as one of multiple sexual identities. And the problem, well, there's a lot of problems with it, but one of the problems is their viewpoint is based on their assumptions, their non-factual, non-objective, unproven assumption, and they want to promote those in public schools, and they're radical. They give an example, and they say, if the assumption that a boy will grow up and marry a woman is based on a heteronormative viewpoint, which is one that you can't encourage, you shouldn't even be making references to ideas like that.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but at the beginning, in the introduction of the Playground and Prejudice document, nice, colorful, 153-page document, it says, in part, this report from GLSEN illustrates the extent to which children's elementary school experiences still draw artificial boundaries on their lives based on critical personal characteristics. Name-calling and bullying in elementary schools reinforce gender stereotypes.
They're calling the idea of gender and the things that we associate with gender artificial boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually are asking kids and teachers, the survey was administered to both children and teachers, and they will ask about if they hear comments about male acting or looking too feminine, or do they hear comments about a female acting or looking too masculine,
mm-hmm.
and how often do kids at your school say that there are things that boys should not wear or that girls should not wear because they're either boys or girls respectively. In other words, they're taking kids who experience gender nonconformity, which is a disorder, and they are now trying to make schools accommodate that belief as if it's normal.
Right.
Some would argue that gender is actually an objective condition and that we should be encouraging people to delight in and express their actual objective gender. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Now, of course, we all support anti-bullying efforts.
Right.
Kids should not be calling names and beating kids up. Of course, we also know you can't eradicate it also. But what they're trying to do is eradicate the belief that gender is something objective and it's good and kids should sort of express mm-hmm. their objective gender identity, that's the bad thing. Now, people are entitled to that belief, but our public schools have no business
exactly.
promoting these radical assumptions about gender. And that's exactly what they do. They want to use government schools, public money, to promote radical ideas mm-hmm. about gender.
One of my concerns also is, you know, there may be a little girl who's a tomboy. And someone like that is going to be very vulnerable to what is being taught or being pushed actually in the schools, as now she's not a tomboy, now she's a gender nonconformist.
That's right. The ideas that they're promoting, I mean, I'm really troubled that kids were asked to answer these questions
yeah.
because, and as you said, this is a 153-page mm-hmm. document. These kids were asked a lot of questions.
Yeah.
They're going to get the impression that somehow the idea that accompanying gender are certain expectations
yeah.
in the culture.
And that's what Glisson is saying. Well, that already exists. You know, guys are expected to do this, and girls are expected to do this, and there's no... You know, and if you cross those lines and you're a gender nonconformist and they try to make you out, they try to define you. Nature is as it is.
Exactly. One of the problems is, may have been 50 or 100 years ago, there might have been the roles that were restricted to certain genders might have been too restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we were erring and saying that, you know, women shouldn't be doctors or something
right,
like that.
Right.
But now we're going the other way too far
mm-hmm.
by saying gender is meaningless. It has no meaning. And as Christians, we know that's not true because God created us male
mm-hmm.
and female.
Correct.
And we're specifically taught there are certain behaviors you don't. Women are not to wear men's clothes. Men are not supposed to wear women's
mm-hmm.
clothes.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean women can't wear slack.
Right, exactly.
Most of us can tell the difference. Most of us women can tell the difference between a woman's suit and a men's
mm-hmm.
suit. And so, but now they're trying to tell kids that there is no such thing as gender. That gender is a construct solely of the mind.
Right.
And that is not an objective fact.
Right, and you can construct it however you want. That's basically what they're
saying.
That's
right. You construct it in your own imagination. I mean, I do not think... Listen, there have always been tomboys. There were tomboys when you and I grew up.
Oh, I was one of those tomboys.
That's right. And a tomboy...
Yeah.
was not someone who believed they were a boy
exactly.
trapped in a girl's
That's
body.
Right.
They were just girls that might have been more athletic, that might have been more rough and tumble, and that's fine. We shouldn't have such restrictive roles that we can't accommodate personality.
Right.
But people who actually experience gender dysphoria or gender identity disorder, it's a serious disorder. It should be treated psychologically, if you can get appropriate treatment in the psychological community anymore. I don't even know if that's possible because it's so politicized.
Mm-hmm.
But public schools are not to be the places where, for instance, I'll give you this. They say, this is from the Glisson Elementary School Toolkit. One of their instructions to teachers is monitor choice activity time, meaning the time in which kids get to run around and do what they want,
mm-hmm.
to ensure that students are not segregating themselves by gender. You know what? Adult women segregate themselves
exactly.
and adult men. If you go to a family gathering or a cocktail party, usually men end up grouped together,
mm-hmm.
women, or at least often they do.
Right.
And so the idea that teachers are supposed to, you know, if you want to talk about artificial boundaries,
mm-hmm.
there's an artificial boundary telling kids that in their free time, they're not to segregate by choice. Little first grade girls cannot choose to play together with little first grade girls.
Hey, at that point, they know all the boys have cooties anyway, so they're going to congregate with their own group with other girls.
Well,
all the guys have cooties.
That's a really good example you bring because that's another one of their instructions. And it said to teachers, intervene when you hear students making gender-based assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
So if some little girls run squealing away from boys saying, you have cooties,
mm-hmm.
are teachers going to intervene now with that? You know, even as adults, we say, you know what? There's something delightful about gender differences, and we should appreciate those. And sometimes those gender differences are sources of amusement. We've all heard stand-up comedians who are making jokes about the differences between men and women. And sometimes those are just sources of amusement. Men find things that women think and do amusing. Women find things that men do amusing. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't be trying to obliterate that or saying every occasion is an occasion for some sort of intervention on the parts of gender obliterationists. Right. You know, that they're to come and try to cease and, you know, all comments and activities that revolve around real gender differences.
Exactly. And it's not just the gender normativity that they're seeking or the blending of the genders. They're also very much pushing the homosexual agenda, because here's an example in the toolkit. It says, write math problems with context that include a variety of family structures and gender expressions. Here's the example. Rosa and her dads were at the store and wanted to buy 3 boxes of pasta. If each costs 75 cents, how much will all 3 boxes cost? Or here's another example. Damon wants to bake a special cake for his grandmother. The original recipe calls for 2 cups of flour. If he's doubling the recipe, how much flour does he need? So they are, again, you know, Damon, I'm assuming they're saying that that's, you know, ethnicity there, but they're equating the homosexuality, the two dads in the previous math problem, with ethnicity, Damon being of another race than white, I guess. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I'd have to read that problem. That could be something to do with saying cooking is usually associated
Okay, that could be, too.
Girls,
yeah, that's a girl's thing. That's true, too. Yeah.
That's right. But they are clearly trying, and that's a huge problem. They call it family diversity or diverse family structures, and they're very explicit about saying they want children to come to appreciate all family and cultural differences. This is a quote. The elementary school years offer a wonderful and important opportunity to instill positive attitudes and respect for individual family and cultural differences, including diversity related to sexual orientation, gender identity, that's that idea that a boy is, feels like he's a girl, and gender expression, which is cross-dressing. Well, I don't believe, nor do I have an ethical obligation to believe, that families headed by 2 homosexual men or 2 homosexual women are equivalent in worth or value, the structure I'm talking about, the family structure, not the people, to families led by a male and a mother and a father. And the idea that a government employee would be teaching kids that all family structures are equivalent, when it's not a fact, it's a value judgment, it's laden with assumptions that are unproven and are radical and subversive, people should be saying this is completely inappropriate. The schools can, listen, I think that they should be teaching heteronormativity and gender normativity, that heterosexuality is the only appropriate sexual expression, and that gender is actually real, and it's objective, and it's good. Gender differences are good. But schools can't do that because everyone doesn't agree. Well, by the same token, then, you can't go teaching that we should undermine heteronormativity and gender normativity, because that's a belief that is not universally accepted.
And that's even less universally accepted than there's boys and there's girls. And,
of course. Yeah. I mean, the really absurd notion is that they will say sexual orientation, which is a term we should stay away from. Exactly. Sexual orientation is fixed and immutable, but gender is a construct of the mind.
It's fluid. Yeah.
I know. I mean, it's not even logical. It doesn't make sense. Gender identity disorder is a disorder. There have to be ways to accommodate it, but accommodating isn't letting these children cross-dress.
Well, that's you're absolutely right. I'm thinking of that little boy in Colorado who the Girl Scouts let him in to their troop because he thinks he's a girl.
Well, there's a law proposed, a bill proposed in California just very recently that, if passed, would require that in high schools, for sure, I'm not sure how young it goes. I'm not sure if the bill actually is K through 12 or just high school. If it's passed, kids will have to be able to participate in the sex-segregated activities in the schools, including athletic activities and competitions, according to the gender identity, irrespective of the gender listed on school forms.
Right, like that's like, I think it's a PGA allowing that transgender, the guy who thinks he's a woman, play in the women's golf tournaments.
And so what does this do for, well, how does that compromise athletics?
Exactly.
And,
that's my thought.
And what do you do about these sex-segregated facilities in the schools, like the bathrooms and showers? And the reason people, you and I, are frustrated by conservatives either not knowing enough on an issue that they should, or not doing anything when they do it.
Yeah.
They are coming using government money in government schools to promote radical ideas to other people's children, and it is coming to elementary schools, mm-hmm. and it will come to every elementary school, and we can't dismiss it because, oh, that's happening in California or it's happening in Massachusetts. GLSEN has national intentions. Actually, I've also written about the new national sexuality education standards that came out a few days before this, and this is, you know, there's a whole bunch of groups involved, Planned Parenthood, the NEA, GLSEN.
I think CECAS was in that too, yeah.
CECAS is huge in it, exactly. Yeah. And now what people need to be aware of is to nationalize comprehensive sex ed so that local communities no longer have the right to choose abstinence if they want to. Well, one of the problems with comprehensive sexuality education in terms of conservative thought about it is that conservatives are focusing almost all of their attention on the abortion and contraception aspects of this, and they're ignoring that comprehensive sexuality education is hugely into promoting homosexuality and transgenderism as normal, good, and right. So it's coming at us through sex education, it's coming at us through anti-bullying, it's coming through English curricula and social
math
studies
problems,
curricula.
Like that math problem with Roseanne or two dads.
That's right. And then in California, they passed the law SB 48, which now mandates that all social studies classes, I think it's 6 through 12, it censors any resources that reflect negatively on homosexuality or transgenderism, and it mandates that they have to include positive images of homosexuality and transgenderism.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering how history will be rewritten as they claim people like Abe Lincoln was a homosexual. Is that going to be part of it? And some of the stuff that came out in October with Gay History Month, they were claiming that, I can't remember the name of the president, but there was a president in the early 1800s was really homosexual. We've already had our first gay president. That's what they're saying.
Oh my gosh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I'll send that to you. It's outrageous.
The absurd thing about this is, listen, if there is someone in history who was a cross-dresser or who is homosexual and they've done something that is universally recognized as positive and important, their contributions should be noted.
Right. The contribution.
Their sexual predilections are irrelevant.
Exactly. But as you and I both know, the purpose of all this rewriting history or claiming some of these dead guys were homosexual is to show how important homosexuals are and just to put the emphasis on their professed sexuality rather than on what they've actually done in history.
That's right, because it's sort of what I call innocence by association. If you associate homosexuality or cross-dressing with something positive like intelligence, creativity, compassion, pretty soon our good feelings about creativity, intelligence, and compassion transfer irrationally to homosexuality, and that's what they're seeking to do.
Absolutely.
They're seeking to normalize homosexuality, sort of this irrational association they're making, and they're doing this to naive children.
It's
irrelevant. If they've done something good, talk about their contribution, leave their sexual predilections out. It's unimportant.
It makes no sense, except that their purpose is to show societal approval of their lifestyle.
People need to be contacting their schools. Even if you don't have kids in the school, your taxes are supporting these schools. These kids are culture makers in another decade or so. We should be calling and asking, does any teacher use GLSEN resources, and or are any teachers trying to undermine heteronormativity and gender normativity? And if they are, then you have to try to get together a group and oppose this and set up in Minnesota in Anoka Hennepin School District. They're trying to establish policy that will prevent teachers from introducing this topic and particularly expressing their opinions about it in schools, about homosexuality.
Right.
And they've had policy actually for 2 years on that, and now homosexual groups are trying to fight it. And the teachers' union has come out against
surprise, I'm totally shocked by that.
And they said in the press, the head of the teachers' union said in the press, we want to be able to express our opinions on this topic in the classroom.
And again, I think back to my intro, what does that have to do with reading, writing, and arithmetic?
That's right. Yeah. Well, I'm speaking at a conference in a couple of days, so I'm talking about this. That's one of the problems, especially with English and theater teachers, because in the policy in Minnesota, the revised policy is going to say they can't talk about it unless it relates to curriculum. Well, that's one of the, I was a member of the English department at the high school up here. I was in the writing center, and that's one of the beauties of teaching English. You can actually connect it to anything you want to talk about.
Yeah, talk about an open door.
Yeah, right. You can say, oh, we're going to do a unit on identity.
Right.
That's all you need in order to get that in there.
And
so,
unfortunately, you know, an unknowledgeable parent can read the syllabus and see that and think nothing's wrong with it.
Yes, you have to understand the way they're using language.
Yeah.
And you also, parents need to understand that you can look at the syllabus and know what book or play they might be teaching,
mm-hmm.
but what you don't know is what supplementary resources they're bringing in. What magazine article or newspaper article are they bringing into class that they don't have to run by their department chair, that they don't run by a curriculum review committee. They just bring it in and no one has any idea.
Yeah.
And of course, and then we're also left with the comments teachers make in class that parents have no awareness of.
No
and that's
idea,
why
no.
policy needs to be written in every school district that expressly prohibits teachers from expressing their views on controversial issues.
Well, but I'm sure that they would get the ACLU to say, well, that's against their First Amendment rights. I mean, I can see that all happening, but I agree. Teachers should not put their personal opinions in or put their personal comments in, tack that onto an issue. Controversial issue.
There's other things that, you know, I've written about this multiple times and I wish people would do it, is they should be asking that the school board write policy that says, I'm talking about high school now, none of this stuff should be in elementary school.
Yeah, that's for
in
sure.
In high school, write policy that requires if teachers introduce resources that espouse or embody liberal views or one side of a controversial issue, they have to bring resources in that students can study that express opposing or dissenting views.
So balance. Give the issue a
That's
balance.
Right. But and again, it has to be written. Because here's what teachers do is they'll say, oh, we're going to teach the Laramie Project.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard teachers say this. And kids are free to disagree. And I said, yes, but our kids, conservative kids, also offered the opportunity to have their conservative views informed by the voices of experts.
That's a very good point. And, you know, talking about bullying, how many conservative kids would be able to say anything against the Laramie Project, which that's a play about Matthew Shepard, is what it is in a nutshell. And I've not seen it, but I've read some very, very bad things about it.
Well, it has a particular bias in there.
No doubt about that.
And that's one of the problems, like, with the term homophobia that's used almost in every anti-bullying context.
Yeah.
It's never defined. And I actually had a conversation with a homosexual activist in California, and I said, would you be willing to require that in all anti-bullying contexts, teachers have to define homophobia so that they would be required to say homophobia is name-calling and physical harassment. It is not the expression of conservative moral beliefs. Because when you say homophobia, people understand that term to mean your beliefs and my beliefs, Christian beliefs that homosexual acts are not moral acts. And this activist said to me, absolutely not.
Oh, really?
Because they believe that our beliefs, they believe the conservative moral beliefs do constitute bullying, and therefore he wants kids to understand that. They want kids to feel bad and self-censor in school, bad about their own moral
beliefs. They want to feel guilty if their parents oppose a homosexual lifestyle. I mean, that's put on them in the schools and stuff for pushing this stuff. If they're being taught in home and in the church that homosexuality is sinful, then they feel guilty when they're presented with this stuff at school.
That's right.
And it's
not only just their parents. There actually are a few kids left who believe that homosexual acts are not moral acts.
Yeah.
And one of the problems is that when they're in anti-bullying things and you have, let's say, someone who's come in, speaks to them, either an adult who's homosexual or a teenager and says, oh, I was bullied and I felt so bad, kids are not good thinkers. And what they do is they say, wow, when that person was bullied, they felt bad.
Mm-hmm.
If I say I believe homosexuality is immoral, they feel bad. Therefore, my moral beliefs are no different from bullying, and I don't want to make that person feel bad. But the reality is, bad feelings can come from bullying, but sometimes bad feelings are actually good things, and they come from an encounter with truth.
Right.
And so all bad feelings are not bad.
That's right. The Holy Spirit, that's the work of the Holy Spirit, is to make you feel bad.
That's right. And schools, liberal educators in schools, are conflating the bad feelings that result from bullying and the bad feelings that result from an encounter with truth, and they're using the language of safety. It makes kids feel unsafe, even though in reality, homosexual kids are not unsafe by an articulate expression of conservative moral beliefs. They're uncomfortable.
They feel uncomfortable, and thus they equate that to a lack of safety. Do you have this particular article that you wrote about GLSEN's new toolkit. Do you have that up on the website?
Yes. Okay. That one is up there, and if people are interested, the one on National Sexuality Education Standards is up, too. They both came out last week.
Okay, and what's the website, and how can people best contact you?
Sure. It's IllinoisFamily.org, and Illinois Family is all spelled out, and somewhere on there is probably, there's probably some contact.
There's a search, there's a contact.
Contact,
button.
And then you can get through the website to me, and there's a lot of stuff I've written about homosexuality in public schools.
Yeah, and people need to be aware that this may be happening in California or Chicago or Philadelphia right now, but I think parents will be very surprised to know this is happening in small town USA also.
It is.
Yeah.
Teachers are coming out of schools and colleges of education, young teachers, and they've all been indoctrinated
with the same stuff. They have. Hey, Lori, thanks so much for your good work and for the great articles you write. I really appreciate it. I depend on you.
Well, thanks, and thanks so much for having me on, Diane.
Take care.
You too.
Have a good
trip.
Okay, bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in defending traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA at Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, 16323, or visit their website at afafpa.org. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of American Family Radio, Lighthouse Ministries of Franklin, AFA, and AFAFPA.